Yeah. You're checking out the Slam Magazine Respect the Game podcast. You heard it first from your boy, Jay.
Alright, what's good world? It's your boy Pete Walsh, aka Lamborghini Petey. Episode 54, the Respect the Game podcast. Back again. I got a very special guest with me. He's in New York for a short stay, just, you know, checking out the sights. We got Willie Reed of the Miami Heat. Willie, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. You know, really appreciate you coming through today, taking some time out. So, you know, just in the short, what brings you to New York for these few days?
I mean, being out here, it's always nice to get away a little bit. I mean, Miami's nice, but, you know, you got to get away sometimes for a little bit.
Yeah, Miami's nice. Probably the biggest understatement of the day. Probably, you know, I was saying to you earlier, you know, you went from Brooklyn to Miami. So, you know, just those two cities are some of, like, the premier markets in the NBA. So, you know, what's it been like just playing in, like, two big, like, media capitals and also having, like, you know, high-profile teams and having that on your resume?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. The traffic's the same.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's nice. New York, obviously, is media capital.
Mm.
And Miami is really big. It's like being on the island, you know, pretty much, except inside the United States. So, you know, the fans in both areas were great. You know, the people that you meet there are always awesome, and they always have great things to say. They always have opportunities lined up, and I think that's the biggest key with being in a big market is that you have things lined up for you.
Yeah, and then, so, you know, before you signed to the Heat, I'm always curious, I always ask people that play with the Heat this question, you know, what was it like, you know, the first time you met Pat Riley? He seems to be, like, this, like, Godfather-type figure, like, the hair slicked back, the expensive suits, like, brought LeBron, D-Wade, and Bosch together. So, you know, when you walked in and saw him sitting there, like, what was the first thing that was going through your mind?
When I first walked in and met Pat, you know, you hear all these stories, so I'm just like, I'm waiting to see, is any of this stuff true? And obviously he's different as a coach that he is, as you know, in the front office, but he's a tremendous guy. I mean, he cares about you guys individually, but he cares about you collectively as a team, so he wants to do what's best for everyone. I think he's a real people person. I mean, he'll talk to anyone who walks up to him, have a conversation with him. He's not out of reach. So the fact that he's always there whenever you need him makes him really special. And the fact that he knows how to put teams together, whether they have superstars or a group of D-League guys that we've had, or journeymen, or people trying to find their way in the league and still be successful, that just speaks volumes to him.
Yeah, and I mean, even going back to his days with the Knicks, when he had a guy like Anthony Mason, who he, you know, took and turned into, like, an all-star type player. And now with the Heat, you know, even looking at this year's past roster between yourself, you know, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson was a low pick in the draft. You know, he, like, has such an eye for talent and knows how to put people in the best situations. So when you got the call from the Heat, did you feel like, wow, like, number one, Pat Riley, you know, knows what he's doing. And number two, he has a history of turning guys into and making them have long careers.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and that was our big thing for the season. It was called culture.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the culture that Pat Riley brings. And now it's just the Miami culture. It's the way. So they make sure that they get everyone involved. They make sure that, you know, get your body fat down. Make sure you get in the best shape. You're going to be in the best physical shape you've ever been in your life. And I think that's been key to be able to help, you know, speed up the process of learning the NBA game. Mm-hmm. If you're in shape, it's a lot more things you can accomplish. So he did a tremendous job of making sure everyone is checked in and getting their weight checked in, making sure their body fat is low, checked in, making sure everyone's getting their extra conditioning in. And it starts to become a way to where you don't think that it's something you have to do. It's something you want to do because it betters yourself, and it just becomes you. And once it becomes you and takes over you like that, you see so many things start to turn out well for you. And it worked out for us all tremendously. I mean, Josh Richardson, tremendous. I mean, obviously, he shot 50% from three in the last half of the season last year. He did a tremendous job for us this year shooting the basketball and defending.
Mm-hmm.
And they turned us, because Tyler Johnson has turned into a player that was just kind of like filling the gap. And now he's turned into one of the best bench scorers in the NBA, one of the best scorers in the NBA. So I'm proud and happy for everyone that I got to play with this year. I'm proud of all those guys, and I just want to help continuously grow and continuously to have that success for everyone individually and collectively.
So did the theme of the team become culture before or after the Migos album dropped?
It was before. It's been since the beginning. And we always had a saying called no fake gym rats, believe it or not, and get 1% better every single day. And we say no fake gym rats. We don't want people coming in the gym just because the coaches are there and you're trying to put in work. We want guys who are going to come in when the coaches aren't working, watching, and you're going to be working. People who's going to come in, you know, on off days, people are going to come in late night when no one else knows you're in there, and you're just putting in work. And it kind of just becomes you and takes over you. And once you do that, you see the improvement. You start to become a better player.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, a lot of teams and franchises preach culture, and, you know, they talk about culture in the media. And, you know, it's a word you hear a lot around the NBA these days. But, you know, when you look at the Heat, to go from, you guys are 11-30 at one point, you know, a lot of teams would just pack it in then and, you know, just call it a season and start getting, you know, their postseason trips ready to go wherever. Yeah. But you guys ended up finishing 41-41. We're in the playoff race to the last minute. You know, how did you guys, I guess, stay together as a team? Like, how was there no infighting and, like, guys always seem to be lifting each other up and not turning their back on each other?
To be honest, it's never been a comeback like that in NBA history. So we made history this year. And, you know, I think what helped us is that we had a group of journeymen. We had a group of D-League guys who didn't know what it took to win in the league, who didn't know what it took to be successful in the league. So buying in was pretty easy for us. We bought in. And while I'm on this topic, you know, the coaches voted Coach Spoelstra as a co-coach of the year. So congratulations, Coach Spo.
Absolutely.
But he did a tremendous job, and he knows how to get the best out of his player, him, Pat. So bringing them together, that's like Shaq and Kobe.
Yeah.
You know, so they did a tremendous job of getting everyone to buy in, and he tweaked the offense, tweaked the defense, everything to personnel. And once he did that, we started to take off. But it was all a matter of us buying in and making sure. We didn't care that a lot of us was on, like, short deals and things like that. We just wanted to win, and we have fun with each other. Mm. And, you know, this season and this team is going to be one of the teams that all of us remember for the rest of our lives just because of how special it was, even though we didn't get a chance to play in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys, like, had some pretty legendary characters on the team too, like James Johnson, Dion Waiters, two guys who, you know, really – became super popular this year, just not only because they were playing well, but because of, you know, their quotes in the media. They seemed to always be having fun. So, you know, what was the locker room like? Like, were you guys having fun in there, or is it just all business with the Heat?
It's fun. It's always fun. You know, you always see us. I mean, Hassan is the Snapchat king.
Yeah.
But we always have fun. We eat together. We go do things together. We have get-togethers at each other's houses. We invite each other over all the time and play cards, play games, and just relax and have fun together. I mean, you don't get an opportunity to play this game for a long time. So you want to make the best of it, and you don't want it to be always business. I mean, sometimes you need to be able to get away a little bit. And when you have guys who have the same type of, you know, free spirit and freedom, where you can just go hang out and not worry about much and talk about the same stuff that you're doing in the game, it's fun. And I think that also helps us to be able to excel and escalate.
Yeah, and you mentioned Hassan, and, you know, for people that don't know your background, you know, you left St. Louis in 2011, and then basketball has kind of taken you all over the world, you know, between the D-League, and then, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was Memphis, Sacramento, and then Dominican Republic, and then Spain,
yeah.
Right?
Not in that order, but yeah, it was out of school, straight to Spain.
Mm.
The overseas didn't really fit for me. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew I felt like I was an NBA player. Obviously, the NBA hadn't worked out for me yet, so it was to the D-League. And after that, I went straight to Springfield, Massachusetts, and played in the D-League there, where I ended up getting called up by Memphis. I didn't get to play in the game, but I sat on the bench, and I got to experience, you know, a team that went to the Western Conference Final, a team that was tight-knit. So when I saw that in Miami this year, when we were so tight-knit, I knew something special was happening. And then after Memphis, I ended up getting waived the following year after training camp. and went back to Springfield, Massachusetts, went to Israel initially.
Oh, wow.
And like I said, I played one game there and realized that overseas is just not for me. Usually you need more than one experience to understand that. So I ended up going back to Springfield, Massachusetts, where I ended up getting called up later that year by Sacramento. Didn't play that year either, but I dressed out in every game, which was a stepping stone for me. Mm-hmm. I went from a suit to dressing up every game. And, that third year, I played in the D-League. I never got called up. I was the number one prospect, so I knew my game was evolving. Obviously, one of the best player in the D-League, what people thought. So I was first team all D-League, first team all defense. So the all defense part made me proud. And I didn't get called up, but I ended up going to Summer League. And, Dominican Republic. And that actually got me ready for Summer League. It was very physical over there. Obviously, it wasn't too far away from home. It's only an hour off the coast of Florida. So they spoke a lot of English over there. My family went with me, so it was comfortable. And we ended up coming back after 6 weeks and playing for Miami Summer League team. And I thought that I was ready. I thought that this was my opportunity that I have to take up and make the most of it, because if I don't make the league here, it's probably, potentially going to be over, considering the fact that I was getting up there in age. So I wanted to go out there and just prove a point that, I can play in the NBA and I've gotten better every single year. It's now or nothing. And I had three really good games with Miami, and Brooklyn decided that they wanted to give me a contract for the year. And it was the most exciting day of my life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. And I mean, was there ever a point when you were just like, I don't know if this is going to work for me, like going to the D League, getting waived, having to go overseas? Was, did you ever lose like your drive or your ambition at all to make it?
I did. At one point, I felt like that maybe the NBA just wasn't for me and I had to find a way to try to make overseas work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's some in my head, I kept playing over and over, and I was like, I do not want to do this. I really want to be in the league. And after I had my firstborn son, me and my wife had my firstborn son, the light hit me. And after then, it was kind of over with for thinking that this wasn't for me. I knew that this was the best way I knew how to take care of my family. And ended up going out there and making an NBA team, and the rest is history. I've been in the NBA ever since.
Yeah, and then, I mentioned Whiteside before, and you guys have a very similar path. I mean, I think he literally played on the same D-League teams as you, too, like with the Big Horns, and then he was on the Kings, and I think the Energy, right? Did you play for them, too?
Yeah, we played for the same teams except for Grand Rapids.
Oh, yeah? And then, so do you ever talk to him? Like, so you guys, did you guys know each other, like, in the D-League at all? And do you guys share that experience?
I never knew him in the D-League. Obviously, I've seen him play. Mm-hmm. When I played Summer League there, he was actually there practicing with us during Summer League. So that was key for me to be able to go up against a guy like that and practice every single day. It really helped me get better and prepare me for the Summer League games that we were going to play. So whenever we were sitting in a cold tub or anything like that, I made sure I asked some questions like, what did it take for you to get your opportunity to make it to the league? What are the steps you had to take? And he was just like, he just had to believe in himself. He knew that he was an NBA player. He had to believe in himself and not worry about what everybody else thought that he could do.
Mm.
And he turned into one of the best centers in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, Defensive Player of the Year candidate. He's definitely a great player. So what he's turned himself into, what he has helped him turn himself into, I really idolize that, and I can appreciate that story.
Mm. And then, so what was your welcome to the NBA moment? I know, like, it doesn't even necessarily have to be on the court. I know, I forget who we were talking. It might have been Sean Kilpatrick was up here pretty recently, and he was like, man, once I got on the plane, like, I knew I was never going back once I saw how, the difference between flying charter versus flying commercial. So he, like, that was the welcome to the NBA moment for him. I was talking to someone pretty recently, and his first game was against the Spurs. He's like, man, I'm going up against Tony Parker and Manu and, like, Hall of Famers. This is crazy. So, what was that first, big, oh, my God, I'm in the NBA moment for you?
I mean, it's a couple of moments. One of the moments was obviously, seeing the hotel room. I mean, D-League, you share a room.
Yeah.
You share a room. You share an apartment as well. So that's obviously different. It's like being in college again. But once I stepped on the floor for the first time in my welcome to NBA moment, I made my NBA debut in Madison Square Garden. I think not a lot of people have the opportunity to be able to say that. And not only did I make my debut, I played well, which started a stretch of games where I played 22 in a row. So Madison Square Garden is the mecca of basketball. Mm-hmm. I mean, New York breeds that. And to be able to make my NBA debut there with my family watching, my wife there, my son there, it was just heartwarming. I almost wanted to shed a tear a little bit, yeah. But I got out there for about 11 minutes, and it was the best 11 minutes of my life. I still remember my first bucket, baseline drop off from Joe Johnson after a shot, double clutch dunk. And, you know, my first NBA point was a dunk.
Yeah.
You know, so that's amazing. But that's my welcome to the NBA moment, my NBA debut, Madison Square Garden.
Yeah. And then, excuse me, your time with the Nets, you know, you came in at an interesting time with them because, you know, they still had KG, they still had Joe Johnson, like you mentioned. Number one, seeing what Joe Johnson is doing in the playoffs still, like, does that surprise you at all, knowing, you know, what he can do on the court just for playing with him?
While we're on the topic about New York, I just want to congratulate Sean Kilpatrick. That's my guy.
Yeah.
I love the way he plays. I understand his story, too. So, you know, if you're listening, SK, man, congratulations.
Very early podcast guest, Sean Kilpatrick. So, we're big fans of him around here, too.
But as far as Joe Johnson.
Joe Johnson, yeah.
As far as Joe Johnson, no, you've seen it every day. You see it in the practice. You knew, you know, what he can do. Obviously, he was going to a stretch where he wasn't, you know, shooting the basketball as well. But you knew that he still had a lot left in the tank. And, you know, these veteran guys have a lot left in the tank. Even Udonis Haslam. I mean, we play 2-on-2 before every home game. You know, so an hour before every home game. We basically get another game in full court 2-on-2 before we play. So he's really helped me learn a lot, and Joe Johnson helped me learn a lot. But I'm not surprised at what Joe Johnson's doing at all. I mean, that's the type of player he is. He's a clutch player, and I'm happy for Joe. He's my guy.
Yeah, and then what about, you know, KG? Did you have any type of relationship with him?
Yeah. When I was KG actually spoke to me when I was in training camp with the Nets. I got cut actually the year before when I was with the Nets. And I just asked him, you know, what is it that I have to do? Like, what kind of, you know, guidance could you give me as far as, like, trying to accomplish my dream? He told me, be ready for your opportunity when it comes. Because he could see it in me. He knew that I could play in the NBA, but would I be ready when my opportunity came? And I even talked to him even, you know, last year when I was with the Nets and when we played in Minnesota. When he came to New York, we spoke. He took a couple pictures with my sons.
Yeah.
And he just wanted to tell me that he was proud of me. He said he was proud of me for being ready when my opportunity came, for never giving up. Because I would try to beat him to training camp practice every day.
Mm-hmm.
But KG was always there before me. If we had practice at 8, he was there at 6.
Wow.
You know, so I tried to be there. I tried to get there at 5:45 one day. He was there at 5:30.
Wow.
So you're not beating KG, but I watched him work out every morning. I worked out with him in the morning occasionally. A lot of times I rebounded for him, but I worked out with him maybe 2 or 3 times out of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And it just taught me so much, the work ethic. And I think that's where what I picked up the most. Like, I honestly, you know, my family and my wife, they tell me that I need to take time off to rest a little bit, but I don't know how to do that. All I know is how to grind, because that's the only thing I had to do to get out of the D League to get to the NBA. So that's all I know how to do. And KG inspired me to want to do that all the time. So I feel like that separates me from others when I'm grinding like that.
So anytime I've ever asked somebody about KG, I always got to follow it up with, when he's telling you, you know, he's proud of you and, you know, to just be ready for your moment, how many times is he using the F word when he's telling you stuff like that?
A couple times, but it's for motivational use only.
Yeah. So you're from Kansas, correct?
Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah. So, you know, just, and then I was looking at your Instagram, just trying to pick up a few little things to ask you. And this is a bit of a sore subject for me, but you threw out the first pitch at a Royals game, correct?
Yeah, I did. I am a Royals fan.
Mm-hmm.
I wore my Royals jersey last year when I was in Brooklyn, and they were playing the Mets. It didn't get really pretty for me. But I wouldn't say that I'm a real diehard baseball fan.
Yeah.
But I love to support my city. I support the Chiefs. I support the Royals. I support the soccer team. So I just want to see my city do well. and the fact that they were able to win the World Series, and I got to throw out the first pitch in the playoffs that year,
yeah,
was amazing. I was just thankful for the opportunity that they gave me, and my family got to watch me, everyone who grew up with me, and everyone from Kansas City who, you know, kind of watched my journey, got to see me accomplish something that I've always wanted to do. So it's a lifelong dream, and I got to accomplish that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're happy that, you know, the Royals won, but I'm still not over the Mets losing that World Series, man. I'm still recovering from that one. But the first pitch, was it like, did you throw like 50 cent, or did you did you throw a strike, or did you at least get it across the plate?
It actually hit the tip of the plate and bounced into his glove. That mound is pretty far. Yeah. I threw it from the mound. A lot of people like to throw it in front of the mound, but I threw it from actually on top of the mound. So you have to watch your step when you're throwing it as well. So it hit the plate. I never posted a video, but I still have it. I actually might use it as a Throwback Thursday post.
Yeah, I mean, the photo you took, you look like you got good form. So you might just want to leave it at that. Don't let people know.
Well, I've already let everybody know that it hit the plate. So
I guess you got to drop it this Thursday.
Drop the video.
But I just want to ask you one quick thing. You had the hashtag Call Willie Up. And, you know, I don't know if it's directly related to social media, but it worked. You know, you got called up, and then you got, you know, the hashtag No Excuses. So can you just talk a little bit about those campaigns and what they are exactly?
Hashtag Call Willie Up, my mother actually started.
Oh, nice.
She actually said hashtag Call Up Willie, and I was like, I don't know about that, Mom. Don't kind of go together. I was like, how about we just do Call Willie Up? It sounds better. And people started getting engaged with it. They started we started having like sweaters, t-shirts, and people started getting it, and they started like hashtagging it on Instagram and Twitter. And it worked for me. We kind of pushed it every day, and we thought that I deserved a chance to be in the NBA. Mm. So we came up with Call Willie Up, and we did it every day. Every time we woke up, I know people probably got irritated with it, but we were just trying to promote the fact that I just wanted an opportunity to live my dream. And then if I had got that opportunity and I wasn't successful at it, at least I know I gave it everything I had. So my mom was really a big supporter of that, and she really helped push it. My wife helped push it. My dad helped push it. My whole family really helped push it. And now we really came up with something called No Excuses. And the hashtag No Excuses really just gives, you know, it doesn't matter what position you're in. You can always find a way to be able to accomplish your dreams, no matter, you know, how you grew up or what your surroundings are like, or if you feel like you're being wrongly done as far as, like, not given an opportunity. And there's no excuses for it. You can be the best you can be no matter what anybody says. And that kind of brings us to how we're in the process now of starting a foundation.
Oh, nice.
The Willie Reed Jr. hashtag No Excuses Foundation.
That's great.
That gives opportunity to, you know, underprivileged kids and be able to give them opportunity to be able to accomplish their dreams.
Mm-hmm. And then correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you did a free camp for kids in Kansas City last year, right?
Yeah, I actually, it's going to be an annual thing.
Great.
So I'm actually doing a free camp. I held about 90 kids, and we actually had got Domino's to do lunch. So that was really good. We did it at Penn Valley Community College in Kansas City. And I just wanted to be able to give back to the community that gave me so much, you know, as far as my dream and helping me love this game of basketball. So I just want to give that back, and I hold a free camp. It's usually for around 9 to 13-year-olds, and I'm really starting to push onto the dream. So that's what I do. But I'm looking to try to expand it to where I do different age groups.
Cool. And then last question, how close have you been paying attention to the playoffs this year?
I watch it. I love the game of basketball, so yeah. I have to watch it, you know, and I try to picture myself, imagine myself if I was playing in the playoffs. You know, I never had the opportunity to play in the playoffs, so that was my dream. I wanted to be able to get that in this year, but we didn't get the opportunity. But I watched every playoff game, and it's funny because you watch it. When you watch the game now that I'm in the NBA, I don't watch it as a fan. I watch it as if, like, I'm trying to say, okay, I understand this pick and roll coverage. I understand who's open and why they're open, and I try to break down the game because a retirement plan of mine is to be a sports broadcaster.
Oh, wow.
So I want to make sure that I'm understanding the game more so than just understanding how to play the game. You know, understand how viewers view the game, understand how commentators view the game, and understand how players and coaches view it. And I think, you know, I'm really taking the time now to understand that. You know, these playoff games, the intensity that they bring, intensity that it brings, and it's a whole nother level of basketball. And, You know, and the guys who take their games to a whole nother level is amazing. LeBron, Kyrie, and you got Isaiah Thomas taking his game to a whole nother level despite his circumstances. And that's a really big push, and that makes me realize that my no excuses hashtag and movement can be something huge, because despite what's happening with Isaiah, he's doing a tremendous job of help carry that team, and I have nothing but respect for him.
And then do you pay close attention to the post-game press conferences at all? Because I think for us, that might be the more entertaining part than the games themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I really started paying attention. It was a couple years ago when a lot of players started bringing their kids.
Yeah.
And Steph, starting with Steph, I was like, man, I want to do that so bad. I don't think my son would be quiet enough. But I really pay attention to it. I mean, some of my favorite was Fizdale, obviously. A lot of people's favorite. And I'm seeing so many people with the shirts being made now. It's just hilarious. I actually want to get one of those shirts.
All right, Willie. Well, thanks so much for dropping by, man. We always appreciate when guys come up. So this was cool. Have a great offseason and best of luck going forward, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. All right.